Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Monday. I don't know whether or not to expect a montage or not, so...
I would have liked to, but unfortunately, the cuts were not available this morning.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it would have been nice to hear what I some of the calls. You know, I assume it was a really well done game by you.
I really don't. Whatever, you can grade me out any way you want.
I mean, I was watching on my way back from Ithaca, watching it on the Big Ten Network. So I was not able to hear your wonderful call.
Whatever.
Although I did hear Matt Millen say 800 times.
About Barkley.
Yes. He informed everyone. He said, people here in State College don't know him as that yet, but they will.
Well, you gotta remember where Matt's from.
Right. Well, he's watched him for years growing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Joe Susan's going to join us at 3:35. Looking forward to that. Bucknell hasn't beaten Cornell in Ithaca in 20 years. How about that? And so we will get to him. Brandon Gowton, BleedingGreenNation.com, is going to be joining us as well. We have Ben Jones. Brandon Gowton will be on tomorrow. Ben Jones, StateCollege.com, is going to be joining us in the next half hour, or the next hour, I should say, in 4:06. And...
How was Cougs, by the way?
Who, Kevin?
Yeah.
I talked to Kevin after the game. I'm going to talk to Kevin. I talked to him after the game for a little bit. We were talking about a couple of other things, and I got to get him back on the show. I think Kevin is one of the really outstanding announcers.
No, he and Matt sounded really good together, too. I mean, they played off each other really well. I enjoyed listening to them.
No, they're very, very good. Very, very good. And so I have nothing but the highest respect for what Kevin does all the time.
I think they actually have the game this coming week, too.
They do, yeah. Yeah. Kevin and Matt have the game this week. Let's see. Topics. Here are the Kevin Hurt topics of the day. What did Penn State do differently this week to avoid sacks? How will Penn State use Barkley and Lynch, and what are their differences as a running back? How much did the use of a fullback help in the running game?
Can you at least say this with a little bit more excitement?
No, I'm just going through them. I haven't seen them yet. Temple's D is the best this season so far. What improvements have you seen in the O-line? In the NFL, did the Steelers' D look good or the 49ers' issues on offense? Why is the Eagles' running game so bad? 0.4 yards per carry, 7 yards total. If you don't move the ball in Chip's offense, the D is on the field forever, 40 minutes total. Did that take its toll? Brian and Romo out. Eagles and Giants struggling. Is Washington now the front runner in the NFC East? Who would have guessed that? They're 1-1.
I realize that, but you know, with the issues the Cowboys now have with a few of their key players, the Eagles seeming to be flat, and the Giants just slightly more inflated than the Eagles, it would seem to me that the Redskins are now your front runner.
They'll lose to the Giants Thursday night.
You heard it here first.
Well, no, I think they will. Did you watch the first game?
The Giants?
No, I'm talking about the Redskins, their first game.
Oh, yeah.
You think they're the front runner?
No. I'm just saying, with the injuries that are there and the Eagles struggles and the Giants not looking too good, if you were having to pick the front runner right now, would it be the Redskins?
It's two games in. How do you know? You got to let a season breathe. Let's talk about this after the fourth game.
Okay. I'll bring it back up after game four.
Fourth game. Something where you got like a sample size. I mean, the Giants should be 2-0 right now.
That is very true.
Right? They should be 2-0, except they've fouled up the last 3 minutes of each game. The Cowboys have a superior offensive line and an excellent defense. They've got the best defense in the division. With Sean Lee back, it's completely changed how they play. Now, they may play low-scoring games, but they're going to win a bunch of them because of how well their defense plays. And I hate to say this, but, I mean, they're probably going to get a little bit better when Greg Hardy's allowed to play.
By the way, Romo will not have surgery, so it is projected he will be out 8 weeks.
Yeah, it's a broken collarbone. You don't usually do. It's just, that's called mending.
It's just called heal.
Yeah. So, okay. Steelers defense, are they that good? I don't know. Ask me in 4 weeks.
No, that was my feeling as well, but I just was curious. I don't think the Steelers defense played that well. I just think the 49ers offense had issues.
Well, no, I don't know. I want to see a 4 week sample size. I think 2 weeks is nothing. Cause, I mean, let's face it, if you start basing it off, hey, look what I just saw, we do too much of that. I want a sample size. And because remember, everyone 1 week ago today at this hour could not wait to see Sam Bradford and that Eagles offense go out and explode on Atlanta because I watched the Green Bay preseason game. So based on the Green Bay preseason game, we're all excited about the Eagles. Really? Okay, the Green Bay preseason game. See, we do too much without the lack of a sample size. We make too many leaps in judgment about what we think we see, what we don't see. It's not.
But I think the Eagles' offense issue.
Now the Eagles are a little bit different. I'll cut you off there because I'm going to do this one.
All right.
You have the leading rusher from last year in DeMarco Murray at 1,700 yards. He is on a pace right now to have 88 yards rushing for the year. Okay. From 1,700 a year ago to 88 is the projection at the moment for 16 games. Chip Kelly has an interesting scheme that he believes in. I understand that. My question is, do you have the personnel to run that scheme? And remember, Chip's been the one buying the groceries. Well, right now, he's burning the food.
He has the wrong groceries and burning the food.
All right. And I don't think they have a line that can handle the blocking scheme he wants. And DeMarco Murray takes too many steps going horizontal to the line and not enough going toward the line. And Sam Bradford's really struggling, and this Eagles offense does not throw the ball downfield. All these passes are behind the line of scrimmage, within the line of scrimmage. I talked about Rutgers the other day going into the Rutgers game. And what did I tell you over and over again going into the Rutgers game? They don't throw the ball downfield. Everything's underneath. They're very conservative. Keep the ball in front of you, and Denman's going to be eaten up by Nassib. Well, guess who got eaten up by Nassib? Denman.
See, the one thing I was going to say about this Eagles offense is the same problem we saw last year when they did struggle. The up-tempo offense is great when you're moving the ball and getting first downs, but when you're not getting first downs, it means your defense is on the field forever.
I agree with that, but that's no doubt that's an issue. Okay, so I'll hang with you on that. But they only gave up 20 points yesterday. So they held up really well in spite of what, that stat. The problem is they can't move the ball, period. It doesn't matter whether you're going, you know, if you're going three and out and the drive takes a minute and 20 seconds, what's the difference between a minute and 20 and 35? I mean, they're not even getting first downs. And so, they're going three and out regardless, it's still three and out. Even if they didn't go up tempo, they still would have been on the field 35 minutes yesterday defensively because their offense doesn't keep the ball. They don't run it effectively. They don't throw the ball downfield effectively. And the bottom line is, I think a big reason why is they can't block. So I don't know if his scheme matches his personnel. But there's another part to this that I want to get into. And that deals, and I'll do this in a college sense in a moment, about the obsession with coordinators and who's smart and who's not. We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It's September, and Sunbury Motors Kia is not going to be fair. We're gonna be fabulous. Fabulous as in fabulous financing. 0% APR financing for up to 66 months on all remaining 2015 Kias, as well as our 2016 Sorento and Forte. Fabulous prices. Every new Kia will be deeply discounted and prices clearly marked. And we have 96 new Kias to choose from. Fabulous dealer. Sunbury Motors has been a trusted name for 100 years. Fabulous warranty. All new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. So hurry in and visit us on the fabulous strip in Hummel's Wharf or at sunburymotors.com. Oh, and if you still want fair, we'll meet you in Bloomsburg at the end of the month.
Financing to well-qualified customers through KMF. Restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Hi, this is Susan Purdy. For over 85 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. Our trained and knowledgeable staff has centuries of experience, so rest assured your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 286-5855, check us out online at purdyinsurance.com, or visit us on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us today. Show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And coordinators, there's been a real obsession with coordinators, coaches, and I realize that they are a primary link between the analyst and the game, that the analyst will sit down every Thursday or Friday, and they will talk with the coordinators. So thus it becomes John Donovan's offense, Bob Shoup's defense, and so on. You know, oh, Kirby Smart dialed up a great, Well, guess what? Whatever he dialed up, they executed it. Okay? I think that what they've done is they've created this impression among fan bases that they all have magic wands and they can take anything and make salad out of it. You'd be amazed at the combination of great scheme with talent and usually mature talent, how it makes a big difference. Auburn and to some extent Alabama are perfect examples of this. 2 years ago, who was the genius of college football and the future of college football because he is a great offensive mind? Anybody hear the name Gus Malzahn over and over again 2 years ago? Look what he's done at Auburn. Got him to the national championship game. He's a genius. Okay. Now, last year, with Nick Marshall as their quarterback, they had a good year, not a great year. They scored a lot of points, but they gave up a ton of points. So, what was the hire of the offseason? The hire of the offseason happened to be Not Jim McElwain of Florida. You know, or any of the other hires we heard along the way and as a head coach, Mike Riley or Anderson out of Oregon State, whatever. They weren't the hires. What was the single biggest hire in college football last year? Will Muschamp to be the defensive coordinator at Auburn. Well, guess what? Auburn won its opener, really struggled in its second game, and was on the doorstep of losing to Jacksonville State, and turned in a mediocre performance against a really good LSU team in Baton Rouge. Now, Gus Malzahn's the same coach he's always been, and Will Muschamp is still a really smart defensive coordinator. But they don't have the personnel, and they don't have the matchups right now to do what they want to do. They don't. Look at Nick Saban. They've won 3 national championships in Alabama, plus he won 1 at LSU. In the last 4 games he's coached, his defense has given up 40-plus points in 2 of them. Ohio State and Ole Miss in Tuscaloosa, I might add. 40-plus. Has suddenly Kirby Smart and Nick Saban become dumb? Alabama doesn't have the right personnel. And it's not mature enough. But everyone thinks that you have a magic wand when you coach these things. Now, obviously, you're the ones that are recruiting the talent and so forth, and you have to develop it. And, you know, some kids develop at different rates than others. But there's a lot put on, you know, play calling and so forth. Mac McWhorter was here about 10 days ago. And Mac and his wife now, they're retired down in Athens, Georgia. And I think the world of Mac. Awesome guy, right? And one of the funniest guys on the planet. And I saw Mac, came up, gave him a big hug, the whole thing, great to see you. And he comes up to me and, you know, we were talking about, you know, he was talking about John Donovan and Herb Hand and what they're doing and so forth. And this is after the Temple game. This is now before, not, you know, before the Buffalo game. And he said, Greg Davis for about a dozen years was the offensive coordinator at Texas. He's now the coordinator at Iowa. And, you know, Texas had a really good run under Mack Brown at one point. Mack was the offensive line coach. Davis was the coordinator. And then, yeah, Will Muschamp was the defensive coordinator. Mack said he ran into Greg Davis in the offseason. He's talking to him. And Greg Davis said, oh, the funniest thing happened. He says, I was down in Grapevine. And this guy comes up to me and he says, I just want to tell you something. For a dozen years, I cussed you out. Every single game, I cussed you out. I just want to tell you, damn, I miss you. Oh, Texas has gone through some lean times of late. Lean times. And suddenly the offensive coordinator was so stupid for a dozen years, didn't look so bad after all, does he? You'd be amazed at the combination of quality coaching backed up by quality talent makes a huge difference. Huge difference. And that's not just quality talent, but mature talent that then plays instinctively. Sometimes you have to grow up together a little bit. Now, are these things that you like to hear on talk shows? No, it's much easier to say, hey, do you think Tim Tebow should be starting instead of Johnny Manziel? That's probably more interesting talk show fodder. If that becomes our primary way of doing things, this will be my last day. We will come back with Joe Susan in a moment. We'll talk about Bucknell's first win at Cornell in 20 years on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdy's have served the Valley for decades. Their customers' needs come first. They find them the best insurance at the right price. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors K, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Joined by the head football coach, the Bucknell Bison, that is Joe Susan. And for the first time in 20 years, Bucknell wins a game in Ithaca against Cornell. Coach, congratulations. Great to have you with us, and happy birthday.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin. It's great to have a birthday present like that. And what I told my team afterwards, that's the first time that we beat Cornell this year. And we'll leave it at that.
Exactly. So, but how did it come about? What did you see? You scheme up whatever you can to win a game, whatever game it happens to be. What kind of execution went with the schemes?
Well, it's the story of what we've done so far when we've been successful. We were able to establish the run game, and what happened in some of the run game was that we were working against very loaded boxes. The 46 defense, or the bear defense, is something that we've seen more in the last three games than I've seen in the last 10 years in terms of how people are doing it across, down, and distance. And what they're doing when they do play that defense, they're playing man-to-man. And we were able to run the ball. Our first drive of the third quarter took up 8 minutes. The thing that it does is it keeps our defense off the field for that time. And we come down, the score is tied 7-7, we kick a field goal. And when you get into the red zone, you want to be counting by sevens. But overall, we took 77 snaps, and Cornell took 47 snaps, and that's a big difference in terms of what the time that your defense is on the field. And Cornell went up 14-10, so that we knew with that possession that we got that we were going to have to drive for a touchdown. And we had a 3rd and 17 on that possession that we converted against zone coverage. Alan Butler made R.J. Nitti made a heck of a throw, and Alan Butler made a very good catch. Then we had a 3rd and 7 that Alan converted. Then we wound up with a 4th and 6 at about the 22-yard line, and by that time the clock had run down quite a bit. And we moved the pocket, which we felt we needed to do because of their pressure signature. Everything goes to a point where they feel the quarterback's going to be, and in moving the pocket, it impacted the effectiveness of their pressure, and Bobby Kastlander made a heck of a play. And then the last play that we had, we were 4th and goal from the 12, and it wound up being, it was 4th and 7 from the 12. Wound up being pressure, straight man-to-man, and R.J. stood strong in the pocket, and we wound up converting to Joe DeFlorio. Joe DeFlorio covered man-to-man, made a heck of a play on the ball, and he got into the end zone. And then we kick it deep. They turn it over on the very next play, and we couldn't put the clock out. We were faced with a 3rd and 1, which would have put us in a victory mode. And we mishandled a snap. Fortunately, C.J. Williams recovered it. And then our defense held, and they wound up snapping the ball out of the end zone to create a safety. But I think the fans like that. The game was entertaining to them. And I found that across my career here that you get paid for four quarters and sometimes more. Mm-hmm. But it's a testament to the young men on our team. And in games like this, if you come out on top, it can really have an important bonding mechanism for your team and a bonding effect for your team that, and in terms of confidence, especially with we're playing quite a few freshmen because they're good enough to play, it really gives them the confidence going into the next one. We're in a bye week now. And that comes at the right time in terms of our being able to heal up some things. We were fortunate we stayed fairly healthy through the Cornell game. But we had some injuries going in, and we actually had five healthy offensive linemen in that game. So you just kept looking at piles and hoping that none of those big guys were a part of a pile that they don't get up from. And I think the conditioning of our players was outstanding in that game, and the strength of our players shows.
C.J. Williams had his 11th career 100-yard rushing game, and he also had 35 carries, which has to be in the neighborhood of a career high. Is he one of those guys, in conjunction with your offensive line, when there is a rhythm that get a little bit stronger as the game goes along?
That is C.J.'s game, and I believe it was a career high for him. The best running backs that I've been around are young men that, as they get into a flow, you know, and you could be running play after play after play, different plays, but a lot of the plays that we run have the same scheme, same footwork, maybe different formations. But he gets a feel for what a defense is trying to do to stop him. And that's, he has very good vision. He has gotten faster compared to last year, but he's so powerful. And if you were to watch him consistently, yardage after contact has been outstanding for him. And that's a big thing. You know, yardage after first contact, he's always moving the pile forward. And I don't have any reservation that had we connected on the snap on that third and one, that we put the snap on the ground, that we would have converted there. And sometimes the best backs have to bring their own blockers. But I think our offensive line really felt that they had taken over the game in the third quarter. And you know, when an opponent is limited to snaps, it makes them rethink some of the things they're doing offensively, where they know we are controlling the clock, because I think we added 10 minutes in the second quarter, 10 minutes in the third quarter, and 9 minutes and change in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I see it in basketball all the time. A team will hold the ball for 30 seconds. Finally, they'll go up, make or miss the shot. The other team goes down. They feel they got to get it back in 9 seconds.
Yep.
I mean, it changes their mentality completely. R.J. Nitti, in today's game, depending on what level you're on, a quarterback has to do a lot with pre-snap reads. And that's in part because defenses, especially if they have experienced players, do their darndest to give you false pre-reads and try to force you into something that they want you to run. How much responsibility does R.J. Nitti have at the line of scrimmage for you, and how many run-pass options does he have where he has to make the decision at the line as to which one is right?
He does a lot at the line of scrimmage. There are really minimal plays where we can go up and go on sound. All right, we did that a couple of times because Cornell was taking their time getting their defense in, or their signals for their defense in. But a lot of what RJ does is he directs the run game. It could be like inside zone in a direction, either right or left. It could be combining inside zone with another run play. And he also has run pass options or pass run options.
Right.
A lot of that he does at the line of scrimmage and done a very good job. The thing that I think he really does a very good job with is managing the protection in terms of how, if we have to get to the line of scrimmage, we always ID what we call the mic. It has some specificity to who's picking up the mic and where the line is sliding.
Yep.
If he has to change that in relation to what he feels, we have a cadence mechanism that he uses in certain situations where he'll hard count a defense into thinking, okay, they're going to, and they start to show the tilt in their secondary, which gives him an indicator as to what, you know, if they're pressuring, where they're pressuring from, and whether or not he has to change it. And there are certain things we do in our passing game where we know we're protected, where he can go on a regular cadence, so they're expecting the longer cadence, and to keep them off balance in that regard. But for a young man who has experience, he's done a great job with what we ask them to do at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, the big thing is getting the runs in the right direction. And in some cases, it's really fairly simple. It's like the grocery line. You want to stand mm-hmm. in the grocery line with the least people. I think it's more complex in terms of when he takes the passes instead of the runs, and then becomes real critical in terms of protection, making the right calls in the protection, and helping the offensive line out, because he has much better vision into the secondary than they do.
And see, and what's interesting, because there are a lot of schools that do that, and Penn State's one of them, that it's very much like your system. But not everyone does that. And the Wall Street Journal did a really interesting piece on development of quarterbacks at the NFL level. And, for example, Bryce Petty is saying at Baylor, they never did what you just talked about. And because of that, he is massively struggling at the NFL level because they never even identified the mic in college.
Right, right. They just call it and run it.
Yeah, call it and run it. Now, I want to flip it to the other side. I talked about the ability to come to the line of scrimmage, and they're trying to give you false pre-reads. And, you know, the safety gives away a lot of that stuff as to what
right.
it really is. For you, defensively, how important, especially with the experience level you have, that you can do false pre-reads as well, or you can really window dress what you're actually doing?
I think that's critical, and I really give a lot of props to our defensive coaches. They've done a great job with our pressure schemes. And not giving an offense an indicator, making it look like it's vanilla across the board or a straight cover four coverage. But there are certain pressures that we want them to know, okay, we're bringing it from here, you better protect it, and we're going to put you in a hurry. Because a lot of people are trying to get away with getting more people in routes with the spread offenses that we have nowadays, where they're trying to get, we're trying to protect with five guys. We're trying to pure slide protect.
Right.
And Clay Ewell had a real good fourth down conversion where he was coming from their left. They slid their offensive line to the right. So he came clean, and the quarterback threw it, and it hit, basically hit Clay in the chest. I'd like to see him catch that and run with it for a little bit.
Right.
But having people that can pressure with speed so you don't have to cheat them up into alignment is important. I think Clay does a great job with it, and Ben Richard is outstanding with that, our linebacker. And we're challenging people with six-man pressure and playing zone over the top. That's been an evolution of college defense, and we got a lot of it from Pat Narduzzi when he was at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really creating there's a clock in a quarterback's head, and when you advance that clock, things have to happen a lot faster. And being able to vary the coverage over the top of that six-man pressure is critical, and we've been really effective with it. And some of it has to do with the athleticism of our defensive line, that within a pressure, they might be grabbing a guard to clear up, to open up the B gap on one side for a linebacker coming around. And they've done an outstanding job with that. It's great to have athletes on that defensive front.
And if you don't mind, one more question, then I'll let you go, if that's okay.
How do you want to handle? Keep me for as long as you want.
Okay. How do you want to handle this week, Joe?
What we're going to do is that there are certain guys that we're going to protect this week. We'll be out tomorrow. It'll be basically a normal first and second down Tuesday for us. We do some things differently. We have actually what we call a teach period, which will slow things down. There are certain things we need to do defensively to stay ahead of the game and really our future opponents. But we'll have an intro period to our next opponent, VMI, and then we're going to do some things against each other that will give some opportunities to – we're going to give a little bit more in the way of opportunity to the younger quarterbacks just to see the evolution of them, letting them run our offense. And the big thing is that we gave them off last night. We give them off today. There's a normal off day for them. Getting some time away will enable some of these minor bumps to heal, but we will still install our first and second down concepts on Tuesday, our third down red zone concepts on Wednesday. And Thursday will be a combination of both. We're still going to go out in all 3 days, in all likelihood, in shells, helmets, shoulder pads. You know, one of the things that we missed five tackles in the Cornell game, and
right.
That's pretty good. So we're tackling pretty well, and we've got to continue it that way. Anytime you miss five tackles in an entire game, and some of it's from a percentage standpoint, it's five tackles over 47 plays. If you can miss five tackles over 70 plays, because one of the things VMI does is run a lot of plays. I think their first game was like 99, then their second game was 88. So they're a pretty high pace, no huddle. So our ability to control the football offensively will really help our defense. And we really have weapons in the special teams now with Alex Peachin. He hit one the other day, 61 yards, and I was hoping it would continue to bounce. But the last punt he hit, when we had to punt after we fumbled that snap, he hit it down to the 3. And their returner is a pretty veteran guy. He fielded it at the 3, and we tackled him at the 7. So it changes the field. You know, if they get a touchback there, it goes out to the 20.
Joe, pleasure as always. Congratulations on the win. Happy birthday, and thanks for
Thank
all
you.
The time you gave us today.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin. You guys take care. I appreciate it.
Joe Susan, head football coach at Bucknell. Big win over Cornell. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Enough of all that false pre-read stuff. What do you think?
I was confused by the false pre-read, actually.
That was the whole point of it. The entire point was to confuse you over what false pre-reads are. There you go.
Actually, I asked about that. I asked about that a week ago because I actually noticed some of those things. You know, that's the one thing when you flip over to the other side and you become the color commentator, you get to see so much more football. Because you're not stuck just watching the ball the whole time. I mean, you're going to watch the coverages, you're going to watch the blocking schemes, watch the linebackers.
Drives you nuts, doesn't it?
It's a lot to watch, and it sometimes can...
Which guy's on my fantasy team?
No. It's like, which guy should I watch next? And you're guessing the right one.
You're the only guy I know that plays fantasy high school football.
If that were the case, I'd be failing miserably at that, too.
Ben Jones, next half hour. Then we'll get to your intriguing questions.
I felt they were very insightful, and... We're going to dig deep into what is happening in Penn State football and in the NFL.
We're done with the NFL.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Your team's what, 1-1? Who do they have next?
Honestly, I don't remember now. Good question.
It's your team.
It's Monday, okay? I mean, I don't start focusing on a Steeler game for Sunday until at least Thursday. The Rams.
Okay, they got the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams.
And you got your guy back this
week. Got my guy back? Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, you know what? Williams has been running the ball pretty well. So, I mean, you lose. He's not as good out of the backfield catching the ball. But he's run the ball pretty well the last 2 weeks.
And you think that...
No,
what?
I'm just saying I am not thinking that he would be a replacement. Not at all. I'm thinking he ran well and did his job for 2 weeks. Now he can go back to being a reserve. That's fine.
Okay, I thought you were going to be one of those goofballs that was going to say, oh, look how he's doing.
No,
that's not the complete game. Oh, okay. Good.
3 years in this program, 4 years, I learned something somewhere along the line.
There's a reason why the other guy's the best running back in football. Yeah.